It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All righty. Welcome to Money for Lunch. You know what? It's nice to have you back. I've been traveling, and I just got back, and so it was good. It's good to have everybody here. Spring is upon us. Spring break is also upon us, I'm excited because one of my kids was home last week, and then the other one's coming home this week. So, you know, it's good. It's good. Real quick, I wanted to mention this. I've been talking about this for a little bit off and on for about a week, but I wanted to mention, and that is, when you get a moment, please go to youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez and subscribe to my wonderful YouTube channel. There you will get inside, never-before-seen interviews with celebrities like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Randy Couture, Apollo Ono, and others, just to name a few. And we'll also be doing some nice giveaways, too. Some nice swag. My book, Dominating Your Mind, is going to be given away, as well as some other stuff. So by all means, go to youtube.com/Bert J. Martinez. You know, I had this conversation yesterday, and I just thought it was something I wanted to talk about today. And you know, this thing that is going on through the internet, not just the internet, just really the conversation is flooding everywhere. And that is that millennials are somehow different. And I don't think millennials are any different than we were when we were their age, right? I mean, the older generation always has some comment to make about the new generation, and the new generation always has comments to make about the older generation. The reality is they're young and dumb, just like we were when we were their age. And they will be old and wise when we get to when they're 50 or 60 or whatever, right? And I've heard a lot of people say that millennials are different, that they're not into, into things, they're into experiences. You know, that's the way I was when I was young and dumb. I didn't want to settle down with a house. I wanted to travel the world. And again, I find that looking back 35 years ago when I was in my 20s, it seems to me that was very common. I think the majority of people wanted to travel. You know, you're getting out of school, you're getting money for the first time, and you've been responsible for, you know, a certain amount of responsibility, getting yourself through college, getting that first job, getting the career going. Most people wanted to spend some time traveling. They wanted to do something fun. And that was just, I guess, commonplace, right? So I don't think millennials are any different. If you have a different opinion, love to hear it. Bert@BertMartinez.com. You can hit me up on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and I will be more than happy to look at your comments and maybe even discuss them here on air. Maybe invite you to be on the show. Man, that would be fun stuff. All right. A lot of good stuff happening. This Donald Trump. Let's see. I have not checked on the Donald in a while. My understanding is that he is... what do you call it? He is in, I guess, not necessarily embroiled in a battle, but he's picked a fight with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that continues to what do you call it, to, I guess it continues to go on. Schwarzenegger took aim at President Donald Trump on his low approval ratings on Tuesday as the duo's Twitter beef rumbled on. Now I'm quoting the Huffington Post. Arnold Schwarzenegger was, the Celebrity Apprentice, the new Celebrity Apprentice. He quit that show based on the fact that he thought the show had too much, too much baggage to continue, right? Schwarzenegger also added that, what do you expect? You take away after-school programs for children, Meals on Wheels for the poor and the elderly. That's not what you call making America great again. Come on. And so, like I said, it continues. Now, here's the deal. I think that the president should be above getting in these little petty disputes. As the president, there's always going to be some criticism about his approval ratings, about anything he does. That's just goes with the job. But I think that the president needs to be above that. Again, love to hear your opinion. So I think that this whole thing started when Donald Trump said that Celebrity Apprentice was suffering with low ratings. And I think that's an unpresidential, comment. That is just, what do you call it? Doesn't need to be said. I mean, I just don't know what to make of it. And it seems like our president, and maybe he's just getting settled in, right? It's a new position. He's never done it before. He's trying to let go of some of his old habits, picking up new habits. And so maybe that stuff will eventually die down. And things will be kind of different or normal for a president. All right, send her. Right now, anyway, so that's just kind of my thoughts on that. Again, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. Let me know what your thoughts are on that. Should the Donald be talking about TV shows? As some of you guys may know, by the way, I have been getting ready for my first bodybuilding show in about 30 years. 35 years, and so I'm getting ripped, as they say. It's a slow and painful process. Looking forward to it. All right, so what else can I talk about? Oh, all right, so I do want to mention this. I have been a member of an organization called the Arizona Marketing Association. For you guys who live here in Arizona, specifically in the Phoenix metro area, Arizona Marketing Association, for you guys who own a small business or even a large business, you may want to come out and check us out. I'll even buy you dinner. So again, hit me up and I'll be glad to set you up. Come out to a free meeting, see what we're about. The Arizona Marketing Association is the place for businesses to learn about how to grow and market the business. Let's see, get her email. I appreciate everybody standing by. Get her telephone and we'll try to call her. And okay, so our first guest is having some problems getting on the show with us, and we may have to reschedule her. We'll see what we can do. We may be having some technical difficulties. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, okay. Lynn's here now. Fantastic. Let's get this party started. We're going to be hanging out with Lynn Eliof. Yeah, I think it's Lynn Eliof. Lynn Elioff, she is a return guest. She was here a while back, and it's good to have her back. Lynn Elioff is an internet business lawyer whose mission is to show business owners like you and me how to cover our assets online without having to spend a lot of money on legal fees. As the founder of CoverYourAssetsOnline.com, Lynn created a do-it-yourself legal toolkit so that entrepreneurs could protect not only their business assets, but their homes, cars, and investment. Lynn says that one of the worst things we tell ourselves is, it'll never happen to me. And that's simply not true. Lynn Elioff, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me back. Happy to be here. And sorry, I had trouble getting through.
No problem. Speaking of things on the internet, sometimes technology doesn't work correctly. So, it's good to have you here. And you know what? I want to talk about this because it seems almost counterintuitive for an attorney to help people save money on their legal bills. So tell us a little bit about why this came about. How did you create this, or why did you create this? And talk about that a little bit.
Well, you're exactly right. I think it is an anomaly to be talking about how to save money in attorney's fees when you're a lawyer. But I noticed that was a big stumbling block for my fellow online entrepreneurs. Being able to start a business requires an investment. And then on top of that, to have to worry about, well, how am I going to protect myself? Do I need to hire a lawyer? That sounds so expensive at several hundred dollars an hour. So I thought, well, there's so much that people can actually do themselves before they hire a lawyer. And even if you did a lot of the legwork up front, then you could take that to a lawyer and save a lot of his time or her time, and therefore the time that you would be billed, just by bringing a lot of this work to the lawyer. How I also created things that you can do yourself, like your privacy policy and your terms and conditions and even your client services agreement. There's so much that you can do yourself that you'd be surprised. And I made it all plain English legal so that it's not crazy and super complicated.
Yeah, I love that. And you know what? It's so interesting, too, because I think that is a stumbling block, like you said, for a lot of people. And it's one of those weird things. It's not only is it a necessity, but it's one of those things that a lot of people have a love-hate relationship about, because A, they don't want to be sued, but B, they don't want to spend the money up front to avoid being sued or to let's say protect their assets, because sometimes you cannot avoid being sued, but you know, simple things can go a long way to protecting your home, as I mentioned, your cars, your investments. And I want you to talk about this. So when it comes to setting up a home office or a home business, what do you tell people? What are the bare necessities to set that up?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And I think if you do this right, you can save yourself a lot of money in taxes. One of the things that you really need to be clear on is the space that you are going to dedicate to your home office. The IRS requires that space be regular and exclusive use. Those are their words. It's taken straight out of the code. And what it means is that you must regularly use that part of your home, that designated space, exclusively for business purposes. So you can't sort of set it up in your bedroom or use your bedroom and then call that your home office. So if your desk is in a segment of a room that is dedicated solely for your office, then you have a home office. Then it also has to be a principal place of business. What that means, so it doesn't mean it must be your only place of business, but you must use your home office to do a substantial part of your business on a regular basis. Even if you're conducting meetings at a location outside the home, you can also deduct expenses for a freestanding structure on your home's property, such as a garage or a studio or a barn. The IRS actually likes that better because it sets a much clearer boundary between what is your home and what is your office.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting because when you think back, companies like Microsoft, Disney, Apple, Hewlett-Packard, all started in a garage. So it's a very common place for a lot of businesses that get started. And again, you may start in a spare bedroom and eventually move out to the garage. Not only, as you said, the IRS likes it better, but it's also probably a better, we call it more functional space when you start hiring that first employee. It's kind of nice. I like that if you can do that. You know, let's talk about this because you mentioned the IRS, what they require when it comes to, you know, your home office deduction. One of the things I wanted to ask is I hear both sides of this and I want to get your opinion on it. I've heard many people say that doing a home office deduction is a red flag. And then, of course, I've heard just as many people saying not doing a home office deduction is just silly. So where do you stand on that? Are you one of those believers that says, hey, take every deduction possible as long as you can document it correctly?
Well, absolutely. Now, keep in mind, I am not an accountant. I am not a tax lawyer. So I really advise that you speak to an accountant when you're filing your income tax return, especially when it comes to your business. But yes, I mean, the IRS allows for deductions for your home office and things associated with that. So if you're not trying to pull the fast one, if you're legitimately doing business from home, then absolutely take advantage of those deductions. Everything I'm talking about here is all on the up and up. This is what is allowed. The words that I used earlier, that it be exclusive and regular use of that space, if it truly is, then yes, you are entitled to deduct it.
I love it. I love it. All right, so let me ask you this. How do you go about calculating the amount you can deduct for the office space you use in the home?
Okay, so we get into a little math here. I'll give you an overview. I won't go too far into it. But basically, the IRS gives you two options when it comes to calculating the home office deduction. And again, ask your accountant which method would yield the best outcome for you. But the first one is called the safe harbor method. And if you use this method, it means that 300 square feet will get you $1,500 in tax deductions. Sounds like a car insurance commercial, doesn't it? 300 feet will get you $1,500 in tax deductions. In 2013, the IRS announced a more simplified, and that's what this is, a safe harbor option for deducting the business use of your home, commonly referred to as the home office deduction. So this optional deduction is based on a $5 per square foot deduction for up to 300 square feet for a maximum deduction of $1,500. So if that's the easiest way, and if you're actually using 300 square feet or up to 300 square feet at $5 per square foot, then you can use this method. And again, that's something for you and your accountant to decide. Method number two, which is what the IRS calls its standard method, this you would use form 8829 for this.
Good old form 8829.
Yeah, don't you just love that form 8829? The other one is actually, I don't have that form number on hand for me at this moment. But this is the actual expenses method. It's the old standard method of determining what you're allowed to deduct. And it basically is the square footage of the office plus the total square footage of the home times 100, which gives you a percentage, right? So you would be deducting the percentage that you actually use for your home office. The bonus to this is that you're also able to fully deduct direct expenses, which unlike the safe harbor method. So if you use the safe harbor method, there's a cap on the deductions. If you use this standard form that we were just discussing where you take a percentage, then you can take more advantage of deductions that you'd be allowed.
I love it. I love it. You know what? And as you said, I just want to repeat what you said. You know, we're not trying to give any kind of specific advice. Definitely follow up with your professional, when it comes to things like the IRS or specific law questions, things of that nature. But, you know, this is, I think, a great primer. And of course, if you have questions, if you want to check out Lynn's toolkit, if you will, you can go to coveryourassetsonline.com, coveryourassetsonline.com, and Lynn's created a do-it-yourself legal toolkit there so that entrepreneurs like you and I can protect our assets. And that includes our homes, our investments, things of that nature. And Lynn, this is something that I do want to throw out there because we're a little short of time since we had a little hiccup this morning. But, you know, you've seen people lose their investments. You've seen them lose their home. You've seen people who get, you know, because they're not willing to take a few extra steps and let's say maybe get an LLC, they go with the sole proprietorship, and all of a sudden all of their assets are being connected to a lawsuit. Is that right?
Absolutely. If there is no brick wall between you and the business, if you are the business is you, then you are fully exposed to whatever happens in your business, you're liable. So that means that creditors or anyone who is suing you can come after your personal assets. So that's when you're in danger as a sole proprietor, because everything is exposed, and that's where you need to take extra care, for example, with insurance. You want to have insurance in place as a sole proprietor. There are things that you can do as a sole proprietor to protect your personal assets. First of all, you want to make sure that you don't commingle your bank accounts. So you want to have one that you use strictly for business. That shows the IRS and the courts that you fully intended to keep these your personal and your business assets separate. You also want to get business insurance, liability insurance, that sort of thing. And that you can't assume that your homeowner's insurance is going to cover you. It probably won't. So you want to talk to your homeowner's insurer, talk to them about what your options are, be right up front. Say you have a home office, whether you have people coming into your home or not, that's going to make a big difference if you have employees. Now, you're liable if they're injured while they're coming up the stairs to your home office. So all these things you need to take seriously and protect yourself.
Yeah, I love it. Lynn, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about this. There are so many topics we didn't get a chance to visit with, but Lynn, always good to have you on the show. And again, if somebody wants to get in touch with Lynn, or if you want to just check out her toolkit, you can go to coveryourassetsonline.com. Lynn Elioff, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Good stuff there about you and your home office. What a great way to start the day. So many of us have a home office nowadays, and that's the first place that most of us go to. And what's interesting is, you know, when I was growing up, having a home office typically was a taboo. It kind of meant you were rinky-dink. Now we have many multimillionaires who run their operations right out of their home. So it's all good. And we're going to keep rolling. We're going to bring on my next guest, Heather Havenwood. Heather Havenwood is a serial entrepreneur, and is regarded as a top authority on digital marketing, sales coaching, and online publishing business strategies. Heather Ann has been named top 50 most followed women entrepreneurs for 2017 by Huffington Post. She's also called Chief Sexy Boss from her Amazon best-selling book, Sexy Boss, How Female Entrepreneurs is Changing the Rule Book and Beating the Big Boys. Heather Ann Havenwood, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Money for Lunch and the Sexy Boss. That's a good tagline right there.
Right there. That's it, man. That's the name that pays. So let's talk about this. So you know what? And this is interesting because here you are. You are co-mingling, to use Lynn's phrase there. You're mixing both, female entrepreneurship and sexy together. And and that is, you know, have you gotten any kind of pushback? Yeah, taboo. Thank you. That's kind of taboo, you know, to even associate one with the other. So talk about this.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You hit it on the nail on the head. I come from Houston, Texas, born and raised a Baptist girl. I'm a bad girl, bad Baptist, basically, as they call us. So, you know, that's a girl, Baptist girl gone bad, as someone told me once. You're a Baptist girl gone bad. I'm like, I'll take it. You know, and here's why. It's because I was in the corporate America in Texas in my early 20s. And I was told that, you know, don't reveal yourself. Where, you know, I wore these big baggy clothes and turtlenecks, and I was very like, oh, I got to be a man, because everyone around me
right.
was at 40, and I was outside sales B2B in Dallas. So I kind of had this, oh, well, they're doing that. I have to dress like them, you know? And it was around my 30s. It was like, I feel so stifled. And what I learned is when I own who I am as a woman, like I'm a woman, and like I have these things called, you know, I wear a bra, you know, like there's this weird, like, why does it have to be so weird? You know? So really owning who I am, and like, I can wear a skirt and look nice, and owning who I am as a woman, that's where power is. It's owning the, what I call the being your own self. The sexy piece is owning your femininity. Okay. And the boss is owning all areas of your life, physical, mental, financial, owning yourself. Responsibility, personal development piece. But the sexy piece, people add those two together and they get all freaked out, you know? And I'm like, they shouldn't be freaked out, because it's basically what we call in Think and Grow Rich, chapter 7, there's a chapter called Sex Transmutation. And what he's saying
yes.
is sex transmutation is basically charisma, right?
Mm.
And when a man walks in a room, 007, he's all looking dapper and we're like, who's that guy? You know, we call
right.
that charismatic stud. When a woman walks in like that, we're like, who do you think she is? You know, so it's this weird dichotomy, and that's changing. Like, she just owns who she is.
Right.
And that's where I call putting those two together. It's called Sexy Boss.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
And you know what? And what you brought up, I think a lot of people will look at it, let's say somebody who owns themselves, right? So somebody who feels comfortable in their shoes or in their skin, and that is sexy. Confidence is sexy,
yeah.
right? Having that, yeah, you know, people walk in, whether it's male or female, at least in my opinion, somebody walks in with that level of confidence, you know, heads are going to turn, people are going to say, who is that? And there's going to be a little bit of inspiration and maybe a little copying there, because we tend to copy the people that we admire, and somebody owns them mm-hmm. themselves, then it's a complete turn on in a spiritual sense. And I think people need more examples like that.
Think and Grow Rich chapter 7, people literally skip that chapter. They see that and they go, I don't get it. And they skip it. And it's literally
right.
the number, I think, the most important chapter. They go into mindset and masterminding, and that's great. But it's owning your personal power. I watched a show called Suits. It's been on USA for a couple of years. Super.
Sure.
Everyone in there is gorgeous, and, like, they look amazing all the time, you know. And
right,
they're
right.
all sexy in their own way. And they all walk across the lawyer's office like, I'm amazing, you know. And why do we watch the show? Because they're good looking, and they own who they are, and they're dapper and sexy characters. And
yeah.
we are attracted to that as human beings, no matter what. And they're wearing, you know, full suits. It's not like sexy means you have to reveal skin. Sexy means the confidence is there. And so I think that that's what's missing in our marketplace, specifically in the female side. And so I wrote the book to kind of tell my story of how I went through the transformation. It's my personal story. And so that's what's out there. And I kind of call it, you know, being the big boys, because – and my experience in corporate America, that, you know, I was number one in the country, and I was beating everyone in the office was around 40 and male, and I was number one in the country. And like about a week or so after I got the, you know, congratulations, you know, pat on the head from the corporate America, I got fired. And it really
wow.
threw me. Like, wait a minute, I'm confused. I was told you go get a job for a big company, you give them a lot of time, you make them money, they give you a little bit of that money, we're all happy. What happened to that? And it was pretty much a political, and I didn't understand politics in corporate. I was like 26, you know. I didn't understand that. And it was a lot also because I was beating the big boys, and these guys were 20 years my senior, and I was beating them, and they didn't like that. So I didn't understand how to deal with that. And it's, you know, years later I can say, well, you know, own who you are, and it's okay.
Right, right. So well, let's talk about this. Yeah, in matter of fact, in your book, you talk a little bit about failure. You talk about that failure is the
yeah.
most important thing to learn from. So talk about that a little bit. I mean, that's obviously a great, example there. I mean, here you are, you succeeded, all of a sudden you got fired. So you won and lost simultaneously. And this is, you know, this happens all the time, and
yeah.
it's terrible that it does happen. But Let's go back to this. Why is failure such an important thing to learn?
You know, wow, that's such a juicy question, but I'll share it this way. Part of the book when I went through a major bankruptcy back in 2006. I built a business from $0 to $1 million in 1 year and then came home one day from an event and literally everything was gone. Birch accounts were gone. Bank accounts were emptied and boom, I'm in foreclosure and bankruptcy within 6 months. And I have to say that for me up until that point in life, I was pretty successful, everything I kind of touched. But it was coming from a place of like proving, and it was a lot of ego in that. And here I am literally in massive failure because I had this like, I'm smart. That would never happen to me.
Right.
Bankruptcy, please, you know. So I'm smarter than that because my parents went through bankruptcy when I was younger. And so I had this like, I'm smarter than my parents. So here I am, I'm 30 and I'm going through this. Like, wait a minute. And it really just, I mean, I went through some deep, dark times. So about 2 years into that and about 6 months after it all happened, I'm talking to a friend of mine, dear friend of mine, who's a mentor and he's a multimillionaire. And I'm literally in tears. I'm crying, you know, whole thing, Kleenex. And he says to me something really profound. He says, I want you to take this pen, piece of paper and write right after me. I, Heather, give myself full permission to fail. And I couldn't write it. I'm like, I can't write that. You know, I'm just like, you know, tears. And he looks at me and goes, Heather, you can never succeed again until you give yourself full permission to fail. Never. And I was like, but I'm already a failure. And I didn't really get it. And now I get it. It's like when you give yourself full permission to fail, it's in that moment you give yourself full permission to succeed. And that's something I had never done. I never give myself permission to fail because, you know, you're taught in second grade, don't fail second grade, can't go to third grade, can't, don't fail, you know, ninth grade, can't go to 10th, and on and on and on and on it goes. And I was like, I have to win, I have to win, I have to win, I can't fail, can't fail. And so here I am in this massive dealing with that. And so I think that's the number one lesson all entrepreneurs learn is that failure is okay. It's like an NFL player. It's like looking at an NFL player going, okay, go out there and don't get hit ever. I mean, come on. The first thing they taught is how to get hit.
Right.
So how to get hit and not, you know, not hurt themselves. And that's literally what they teach them. How do you get hit? And how do you hit without getting hurt kind of thing? So it's the same thing in entrepreneur world. The number one thing they should teach people in entrepreneurship is how to fail first. Because it's in that side of failure that you actually succeed.
Well, you know, what's interesting. Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. You know, a couple times a year, I get to hang out with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he talks a lot about failure and how that the reason that he is so successful is because he's always willing to fail at anything that he tries, right? He says that most people get hung up on that. They're afraid of failure. They're afraid of being laughed at. They're afraid of other people's opinions. They're afraid of what their friends are going to say. And he talks about this. And bottom line is, if you're afraid to fail, then you'll never win on a big scale. And you look at a guy who has won in politics. He's won in movies. He's won in athletics. He's won in business. He says only because I believe in myself enough to fail and just failed on a massive scale.
You know, first of all, I just went to the Arnold the 2 weeks ago in Ohio. That was really amazing and the most amazing event I've ever been to. It was profound. I don't know if you've been there, but it was really awesome. The one and 250,000 people. But
yeah.
Here's the thing about bodybuilding, because I'm a bodybuilder, my boyfriend's a bodybuilder. When you go into the gym as a bodybuilder, your brain is like you're here to fail the muscle. It's only in the failure of the muscle that the muscle grows, ever. You can't not grow the muscle without failing the muscle over and over and over again. And if you look at that, it's literally the grounding of entrepreneurship. Same thing with sports. You can't win in sports if you don't go out there and go get hit and then learn to get hit and then hit and then not get hit. Oh, I didn't get hit that time. You know, it's part of the failure process. So now when I do a project or event, but now I have 4 online businesses, now I'm doing really well because I always come from a place of I'm going to go out there and create this and it doesn't matter if I fail or not. So in that viewpoint, in that mindset, it's like I'm creating. Oh, I didn't do that great. Oh, I'm going to tweak it. Creating. It's a totally different space. There's not like, oh, I'm not going to create it unless I know it's going to win. You're never going to create anything.
Right.
You're stifled. You know, it's like going to a football game and going, I'm not going to play unless someone tells me we're going to win. Well, then just get off the field, dude. You know, so it's the same concept in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I love that. I love that mindset too. And it's so funny that you mentioned Columbus. I was there as well. I go there every year. Yeah, so we were out and about, and we probably walked right past each other or right around each other. And so, absolutely, we have a meeting. Me and a couple of, in fact, I brought four clients with me. So we had a little, mastermind before before the show started. It's a really fun event, and then we do another one in June. So it is important. The lessons that we learn from sports are so applicable to life, and you've said this a couple times in football, in bodybuilding, in just in any sport. You know, we look at failure as a learning opportunity. We don't get hung up about it, but and then for a lot of people are not able to transfer that to life, and they get all sorts of hurt and hung up. And I think that's the biggest thing that people need to understand, that, and that's what sports is such a wonderful thing, is that you can go there and fail. And by failing better, faster, bigger, you become a sports superstar. When you look at the home run hitters, the Hall of Famers are people who failed like 70% of the time, and it's an amazing thing. And we get so screwed up on that because you're right. We have been programmed that failing is bad, and not only is it bad, that it's hard to recover from. And I think that's very far from the truth. I think that failure is good.
Yeah, we're just told to pass. You know, like think about it, just fundamentally in kindergarten all the way through, you know, 12th grade, just pass, get over the hump. And versus looking at, I failed second grade spelling. I mean, I'm like, I did. You know, so, but it's owning that. It's interesting. I talk about the Arnold. The Arnold for me was looking around 250,000 athletes, you know, people there to support athletes. It was like 20,000 athletes there, I think. And I thought, wow. That's truly profound what he has created there. I mean, Arnold's unbelievable. And then I found out there was like an Arnold kid somewhere else in Columbus that they couldn't even put it there because it was so big. They had to put it on the other side of the – somewhere in the city or something. And I thought, look at this thing. He probably did not – had no idea. And what I found, we met a couple, two guys, that they were there at the very first Arnold years ago. And he's like, yeah, we were the first sponsors. We just got like a little table and he put us by the bathrooms and we just like hung out. And now, like, you know, 25 years later, he's like, we don't even have a booth. It's like $85,000. We're not doing it. But I was just like, that is just amazing. He just started. He didn't know it was going to be huge. But here's the problem I have with society today and around this. They see things like Facebook where, you know, Mark's like hanging out in his dorm room, boom, billionaire. It's like they think that's how it should be. They don't look at what I call true success in life, where people have failed thousands and thousands and thousands of times before they hit it. And they look at that one example, or Apple, you know, Steve Jobs, and they think, oh, well, he created this years ago. Boom, it's big. He failed a lot inside of that company. They don't.
Oh, my gosh.
He failed a ton. I mean,
he did. I mean,
the doors, it was like unbelievable. People forget about that.
They do. And you know what? Here's the thing I've learned from Apple and from Mark Zuckerberg and some of these other guys. There are always exceptions to the rule. So the typical entrepreneur will fail more times than they're successful, and before they start make it big. Apple, and again, Facebook, these were one-hit wonders that kept hitting, right? I mean, right now, Mark Zuckerberg is trying to leverage Facebook. He's bought Oculus. He's bought Instagram, and he's bought some other stuff. And you know what? And speaking of failure, the guy who started Instagram had applied not once but twice to work for Facebook, got rejected both times, could not get a job at Facebook, created Instagram, and he sold it to Mark Zuckerberg for $2 billion. How about that for failure? Now, you know, that to me is a typical entrepreneurial story, right? Where you lose, you lose, you lose, you lose, and then you win. And now the question is, can you keep winning? But back to Facebook or back to Apple, again, there are exceptions to every rule, and I think Apple might be an exception to the rule. But when you start peeling over the layers, you mentioned, you know, how much Steve Jobs failed. I mean, first of all, he started in the garage. Second of all, he was told by a million people, hey, it's not going to work. He did a grassroots. He dialed and smiled to get the computers being sold. But, you know, then right as Apple is at the peak of its the first peak, when it's just about to blow apart and its stock is very high, he gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
And,
he gets fired,
you know, yeah, he gets fired from his own company. I mean, that to me is ultimate failure, right? But Steve Jobs, when I say he's the exception to the rule, is because it seemed like whatever he did well. Because unbeknownst to a lot of people, Pixar was an Apple, was a Steve Jobs project. He bought it from George Lucas of Star Wars fame, developed it, got it started, partnership with Disney, and then he ended up getting out of it. But, I mean, the guy was exceptionally good. He was just gifted. And here's the other thing I liked about Steve Jobs. He was kind of a jerk to work for. That was kind of a badge of honor. If you could put up with working for Steve Jobs, you were in that inner circle. People who, you know, who had the fortitude, the tenacity, and the courage to put up with his kind of, we'd call it philosophy or work style or whatever. So, and then I don't know that much about Mark Zuckerberg, but again, he was up there. You know, this is the other thing that I think a lot of people sometimes misplace or misjudge, and that is, you can look at a Mark Zuckerberg and say, this guy was lucky. He was at the right place at the right time. Yes, but there's a lot of people, and Heather, you and I probably know, just like everybody listening, we know there's a bunch of people out there who were at the right place at the right time and didn't take action because of fear.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And the difference.
Go ahead. It was going to win. They weren't sure it was 100% win. They were looking for what I call, they were looking for someone to say, yes, this is the right direction. And again, I think that goes back to when we're taught at young age. I mean, we're taught in grade school. It's like, oh, I want to go in this direction. And they look for permission somewhere.
Yeah.
And that thing, that's the thing that Steve Jobs never did. He never asked permission, ever. He never cared about the permission. And that is a critical piece of entrepreneurship. And I've taken that on myself in the last couple of years. One of the things I talked about my book, Sexy Boss, before I launched it, I didn't tell anybody. I had like two people in my life that I was, you know, working on it with, of course, and one other person. But I didn't go out there and start talking about it because I knew the moment I really launched it, I was going to get all kinds of weird feedback. And I did. I got really, I love it. I got really like, that's ridiculous. I can't believe you did that. I got across the board and I was like, you know, I know I did the right thing and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be okay. And I think it's been my launching pad, but I didn't care anymore about other people's permission. And that's something I had to learn because an entrepreneur, we're always looking for, I feel like we're always looking for, is this it? Is this it? And then we ask our friends, is this it? Do you think this is it? You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, you just go with your gut. And Steve Jobs never asked. He's just like, this is what we're doing. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? And you and I could literally spend a whole show on asking permission and fear of failure and stuff like that. You know, something else that's interesting. First of all, I didn't know about your bodybuilding background. I also am a big fan of bodybuilding. And matter of fact, this year at the Arnold, I got to speak at one of the programs they had there. So that was fun. But here's something else I didn't know about you that we have in common is that you said you grew up in Houston.
I did. Born, raised Houston girl. Texas
there you
girl.
Go. I grew up in Bel Air.
No kidding. Oh my God. We are. I went to Katie Taylor in Klein Forest, and that's like, you know, details here in that area.
Yeah. Now we're all going, what are these guys talking about? So yeah, I went to Bel Air High. I went to Bel Air. Yeah. So, in fact, I'll be in Austin here in the next couple of weeks, and maybe we could, if our schedules line up, maybe we can get together and do something. It'd be fun. And either way, I'd love to bring you back and talk more about Sexy Boss, because I think everybody needs to go out there. Sexy Boss, how female entrepreneurs are beating the big boys while changing the rule book for money, success, and even sex. You can find it at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. Heather,
can
and hey,
can can I give people your free gift? I appreciate that. Sorry about that. Yeah, Heather in Havenwood. But here's a free gift. They can text the word sexy to 72,000, and they get 3 free chapters of my audiobook, Sexy Boss. So I'm going to repeat that. Text the word sexy to 72,000.
All right. So we're going to text the word sexy to 72,000. And what a great number. It's easy to remember. 72,000, text sexy, and you get 3 free gifts there. And you can find out more about Sexy Boss Inc. at sexybossinc.com. And Heather Ann, thank you so much for stopping by today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there from Heather Ann Havenwood, changing the workplace by being a sexy boss. You can find out more about her at sexybossinc.com. Or better yet, if you will, text sexy to 72,000. If you've not ever done that, all you have to do is go to your text, wherever you text that, whatever that is in your phone, you type in, instead of typing in a phone number, you're going to type in 72,000. And then in the text message area, you put in the word sexy, you hit send, and Heather takes care of you. She'll love that. And that'd be a great way to connect with her. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Debbie Silber. Debbie Silber, president, CEO of Lifestyle Fitness and founder of DebbieSilber.com, is recognized health empowerment and personal development expert. She's a speaker, coach, and author of the Amazon number one best-selling book, The Unshakable Woman, 4 Steps to Rebuilding Your Body, Mind, and Life After a Life Crisis, as well as 2 books recommended by Brian Tracy, Marshall Goldsmith, Jack Canfield, and many, many more. Debbie's led countless others to achieve their ultimate body, mind, image, and lifestyle, inspiring them to transform into personal and professional best. Debbie Silber, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. So, you know what? I'm excited to have you on the show because I want to talk about this phrase that we hear so often, right? And that is self-sabotage. And why, I want to get your thoughts on self-sabotage. Is it real? Is it just made up? I mean, if it is real, then why do you think we sabotage our success? So a couple of questions there to start us off.
It's very real, and I'll tell you, recently I did a TEDx talk on it, and it must have hit a nerve because that talk gets at least 300-400 views a day. I mean, it's something that we do. Yeah, we just, you know, and we do it because there's so much going on that we just aren't willing to face, because if we do, it's like removing the last pebble that's holding back that avalanche. Yeah.
Wow.
So we do things like we'll eat, drink, watch TV, do drugs, even keep busy. I mean, anything just to distract ourselves and stay numb and sabotage our success. That success can be very, very frightening, and it brings up a bunch of things that really change the game. And if we're not ready for it, if we don't know who we'd be with those changes, we'll do everything we can to stay safe, stuck, and small.
Safe, stuck, and small. And it's interesting because, you know, I have read a lot about the way the mind works. And one of the prime objectives of our mind is to keep us safe above anything else.
It's absolutely true. And even if it doesn't serve us, and there are so many things, though, that we want, but it requires change. And when only, I mean, I've seen this so many times, when the pain of where we are becomes so much greater than the fear of the unknown, that's when we jump. That's when we say, you know what, I don't know what's next, but it's got to be better than where I am now. Or very often it takes a life crisis, that shakeup, that psychological earthquake, you know, where your world is now compartmentalized into before it happened and after it happened. And sometimes we look at these things as huge tragedies, and yeah, they are, but very often those are the greatest catalysts because they help us move.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. In the TED Talk, just so we can, in case our listeners want to follow up with that, what is the name of that specific TED Talk?
Why We Sabotage Ourselves, Debbie Silber. So they can just look up my name and they'll see it. I think it's at like 84,000 views, something like that. And it's
That's
only about
amazing.
A year old. So yeah, it's getting a lot of attention, and I get it. I mean, the clients I see, it's so common. It's so common. They could be doing really, really well, let's say with health or with weight loss or with fitness or with their business, and then bring themselves to the screeching halt and they cannot figure out why. And it's always something so much bigger underneath it. And when we uncover that, then there's that real, you know, decision to make. Like, for example, I mean, I was working with a woman and she would gain and lose, you know, 30 pounds 30 times and had been to everybody. And we uncovered, you know, what's the real fear and what's the real loss of losing that kind of weight? Well, you know what? She was forced to face the reality that she wasn't in love with her husband anymore. So something
wow.
like that, we don't even realize we do it, but you know, we go back to the old way of eating so we don't have to see something like that. Because think of the cascade of events that happens, at, you know, then. So we do that all the time.
Man, that is wild. That mm-hmm. You know what? And it's interesting to bring that up because that is just the way we work. That's what makes humans so interesting in such a bundle of mess. Here's one thing that doesn't seem to be connected to the other thing, but they're both affecting each other. And
mm-hmm.
here she is struggling with, like you said, losing 30 pounds, you know, 30 times. And why? Well, you dig deep enough and you find out here is what, you know, this root issue is. And so it just shows you how difficult it is sometimes for us to achieve anything because we as humans get screwed up.
It's true. I mean, I gave another example in the talk where, and this is in business. You know, there's a client I renamed her, Margot, at top of her game. I mean, you'd look at her and you'd say, wow, she's made it. She's making an amazing living. She's well-respected, top of her field. And she's, her energy was down. So she sees me to get her energy back up. She starts working out and she's doing all these things. Energy's up and so is the clarity. And all of a sudden she realizes, oh my gosh, you know, for the last 25 years, she's been climbing the corporate ladder in a field she chose just to please her parents. She's given up everything for this. She never got married, never had kids. This is all she's known. She hates her job. You know, what does she do? That's a big one. So she doesn't even realize she's doing it, but she stops going to the gym. Sabotages her success. So it's things we do like that all the time where we think, oh, it's the gym, or oh, it's the thin body. Oh, no, it's not. What's going on underneath that?
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. You know what? And I know that we have a hard stop because you have another interview lined up. So I want to get ask you this real quick. And I want to talk about how does our mindset hold us back? Since we're talking about some of this mental stuff, let's talk about mindset.
Sure. Well, you know, we have these belief systems, and really a belief is no more than the repetition of an idea from someone you trust. I mean, that's it. All that means is someone you trusted, a parent, a teacher, someone in a religious capacity, whatever, said something to you enough times, and it became your belief. Now, that doesn't make
okay.
it good or bad, doesn't make it right or wrong, doesn't make it true, oh, but it makes it yours.
Okay, so say that again. I love that. I love this definition. Something that
the repetition
somebody...
of an idea from someone
uh-huh.
you trust. That's it. That's
yeah.
all
and,
the belief is.
And I want to say, I want to add my little birdism to that, and that is sometimes that trusted authority is ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Someone says it, we take over, or we just get an idea, or we see something and it makes an impression on us, and
yes.
and we just, it starts as a thought. And then we just keep going over it and over it. We infuse it with some feeling. Now it becomes an emotion. We keep it going. Now it becomes a belief. And, you know, the mind wants to prove you right. So if you have a belief in place, then the mind just looks for confirming evidence all day long to support it. And it's like, you know, you have between 60 and 80,000 thoughts a day. So the mind kind of says, oh, okay, you want me to keep repeating this? No worries. Go about your business. I got it.
Yeah.
So if you've laid down this belief of I'm not worthy or I'm not important or whatever, you're repeating some form of that thousands of times a day. If you did anything thousands of times a day, what would happen? So
absolutely.
It gets us into a whole lot of trouble.
All right, so let me ask you this. Here you are, you're a life coach, you're an entrepreneur, you help people, as
mm-hmm.
you've already illustrated, with their mind and their emotions and getting stuck.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about affirmations? Are you a believer in affirmations? Because to me, what you described, us repeating thousands of times a day, is an affirmation, whether it's good or bad.
You know, and affirmations can be wonderful. What I do with my clients is something a little bit different. It's called a bridge. And a bridge is a believable statement that we can say. I mean, here's an example. You know, let's say an affirmation's great, but take a 400-pound woman, and if she looks in the mirror and says, you know, I'm a lean, mean 125, that's her affirmation.
Right.
Well, the mind's like, no, you're not, kicks it right out. Right? So a bridge is a believable statement she could grab onto until it, like a new track is laid down in her brain. So let's say that woman is eating healthier. It's very fair for her to say, I'm eating healthier every day. I'm eating healthier every day. I'm eating healthier every day. If every time she says, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, which is the track that's laid down that she's saying thousands of times throughout her day, and if she catches herself and commits to saying that new bridge of I'm eating healthier every day, I'm eating healthier every day, well, eventually that new track gets laid down. The old track loses its charge. That's literally how you change your mind. So affirmations can be great, but I'm a big fan of bridges because they're real. We can grab onto them and they make sense to us.
Yeah, I love that idea of using a bridge because it makes, as you said, it's a great connection between where you are and where you want to go. So if you're trying to lose 200 or 300 pounds,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to do that by saying, hey, I'm a lean, mean fighting machine. But
mm-hmm.
you can get there by starting off with that bridge, that first, you know, inch,
mm-hmm.
you know,
absolutely.
And now your affirmation is I'm eating healthier every day. That mm-hmm. is something believable. That is something that you have total control of, and it's something that you can start immediately.
Oh, absolutely. And I do this with my clients, and I'll tell you, I mean, their transformations are profound. I mean, anything from losing hundreds of pounds to getting off medications, ridding themselves of disease, starting new relationships, I mean, you name it. But as much as we work on the other areas, health and lifestyle and all of these other things, mindset's at the core every time.
Every time. Absolutely. I mean, something that we were talking about earlier today, and that is the fact that how many people are in the right place at the right time. They have all the assets lined up. They have all the resources, all the connections, but yet they're so afraid that they never do anything about it, and therefore they're stuck. As you said earlier, they're safe and stuck and small.
And sick very often too. I mean, when we're so fearful and when we have those negative emotions, I mean, every single negative emotion we have has a little stress chemical attached to it. You keep firing off these negative emotions all day long, you know, fear, anger, anguish, hopelessness, helplessness. You're just drowning in this sea of stress-induced hormones, and it can't help but create wear and tear. You know, I do stress testing as one of the things that I do with my clients, and I'll tell you, they can even look great on the outside, but there's a train wreck on the inside from all that stress.
Absolutely. Debbie, we're out of time, and I know you have another interview to get to, so I want to just say it's been a blast having you on the show. Looking forward to have you back again, talking more about our mind and our health and our empowerment. If you guys want to find out more about Debbie, you can go to Debbie, D-E-B-I, Silber, S-I-L-B-E-R.com. Debbie Silber, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from Debbie Silber, and how everything comes down to our mind, right? I mean, whatever you believe, whether it's right or wrong or imagined, will eventually manifest itself in reality. So if you're struggling with your health, your wealth, or something like that, then maybe you got to check out what you're saying to yourself. It's always it's good to have you here. And as always, I appreciate your support and I appreciate your comments and I appreciate you following me on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.